Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2647. That's 2647. I'm Carol Levine. I am Vice President of NASCA. And tonight we have Pastor Deborah Schleck on. And I remember last month we had a wonderful show. Yes, we did. And tonight we're going to have another wonderful show because of a very good topic. Okay, we're going to have a very good topic here. And that topic is depression. But before I get to that, I receive a lot of phone calls on people who are terribly depressed, and we're going to go all through that. We're going to tear it apart, okay? But let me first of all read the mission statement, all right? We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two different ways. And number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Okay. And number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, people that know me know that I'm very much for prevention, and this is something, this could be a topic on itself one night, because prevention is so, so, so important, and a lot of times it involves community, and I'm very much involved with community. But before I go any further, okay, I just want to make mention that I call a doctor, okay, but she is a pastor, she's a little bit both, if you ask me, because she has so much knowledge, and at times she's worked in the mental health field, certainly higher up than I worked in it also. I worked at Greystone Psychiatric. I was a technician, state technician. I learned a lot. And she, of course, was higher up, and I learned from people like her, and we understand, you know, a lot about depression. I've gone through depression, and sometimes it's not an easy thing to get out of. Trust me, okay? All right, so with the mission statement read, we can get on with the show, and I want to give out the telephone number here because those of you who are suffering from depression, don't be ashamed. Don't be upset about it. Let's find a solution. There are solutions to problems. And, you know, this is what people have to understand. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. And that can cover many areas of concern. And that's the truth right there. All right, the number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. If you call this number, you can be a part of the panel. Or you can listen. Some people are bashful about coming on live radio, and they feel funny about it. But if you can talk on the phone and hear my voice, you know you can be here. Okay, all right. It's not that hard. And we're always interested in a lot of interaction, you know, with people here because we survivors do so often suffer from so many different maladies. so many different illnesses, so many, there's just so much to talk about. Okay, so right now we have Mark here. We have our special guest, Dr. Deborah. All right, Pastor Deborah. And there's myself. There's also Pamela. And she's an ambassador, and she's also a big part of the board. And so anyway, we've got, and myself, of course, we are here. So again, that number is 646-595-2118. Give us a call. Be a part of the panel, or don't be a part of the panel. But for heaven's sake, listen. Okay, that's the big thing. Because what people need now is help. All right. So with the topic of depression, I'm going to call you Deborah, okay?
Okay.
With the topic of depression, what do you suggest, you know, that people do? And then I'm going to read off the 10 signs of it. But what would you suggest if a person that you know of who comes to you, or maybe you spot it, what would you suggest for that person to do?
Typically, the word depression comes out of the mental health medical terminology. Typically, you would want to get a thorough medical examination because people's biological systems, their balance, their chemicals, their hormones can be change, going through change for women with the change of life. There can be an imbalance in the brain, neurons, and chemicals. There can be other medical reasons for depression. So first you'd want to have a thorough medical examination by your primary care doctor. Tell him you've been having, you know, thoughts and feelings. And he might check your heart and, I don't know, do everything. That's usually where they want you to start, so they can either rule something in that they can maybe give some medication for, or they can rule a lot of things out. And the doctors know that our diet, what we eat, what we drink, they do know, they are aware of trauma and abuse and life and negativity. They know that. But their main focus, we'll say a primary care physician, is to deal with the biological body. Then if you say, well, I think I need what they call talk therapy, cognitive, I want to talk to somebody, they would refer you to a psychologist. He can do, there's something called the Beck Depression Scale. And they ask you questions about your feelings and things. They can do other sorts of, we'll call them cognitive testing, to sort of figure out what you're thinking. And, of course, they ask you about childhood trauma, the ACEs. Now, if you answer three or four answers of yes to a childhood trauma, they know that you might, even as an adult or a teenager, still be experiencing those traumas, and they can affect your biological system and still have an effect through memories and cognitive things that you have believed. So you would go to a therapist, and they would start asking you questions and trying to help you develop, they call them survivor skills, some things that when certain feelings come up or thoughts, that you would do something else. Other people are also recognizing, if we do aromatherapy with many different kind of essential oils, or, you know, have lavender and stuff, they go through the nose and they affect the actual brain's chemistry that can bring peace, can bring agitation. There are certain things, they know that. Some people, you know, smelling coffee is very relaxing, or tea, because it's going up the nose. Or if you just, and if, of course, if you have a cold, your head stuffed up, worried about COVID, that stress that you're thinking about, and it will change, you know, chemicals within you. And they know that a human has days where we feel real good, lots of energy, and the next day we're just down in the dump, and it's called swinging, sort of. Every human does it. You know, some good days, some bad days, something happens. It takes all our energy to get through it. And then we are exhausted because our stress hormones that sit on top of our kidneys and they produce cortisol. We have used that with adrenaline, which is sugar. And once we get through whatever challenge that was, we have, and that subsides, we are depleted because we used extra sugar. Our heart beats faster. Now we're tired. And we all go through that. Then some of us are able to recognize that and do some self-talk within ourselves, like, hey, this ain't so bad. You know, it could be worse. And a lot of people, that's what they don't know how to do, that positive self-talking to themselves. So by going to a therapist who will teach them, when you have these feelings, instead of just letting the feelings run you, stop them and say, wait a minute. Okay, we ain't going to do that. So it's self-talk on the inside of a person, in that cognitive part of us, that is trying to get control of the situation. Now, during COVID, as I was telling Carol, a lot of people try to have fun, be with family, do wonderful community things, go out to ball games and things, and it makes them feel good and happy. But when you can't do those, you know, due to COVID, then that drug that helped you feel good, okay, isn't there. So you can literally be going through withdrawal symptoms of community activity, and it doesn't solve the problem. Sort of like you watch a movie and you're into it, and then it's over with, and there's no noise, and it's just you again with your own biology and the chemicals and your own thoughts. And a lot of people don't like to be alone. And, you know, they don't like silence, so they have to have noise or lights. And a lot of the kids that are doing the video games now, it is actually, they tell you, it's changing the brain chemistry because the lights and the sound are actually set by the gamers to do certain things, so you feel you become in bondage, and if you don't have it, you feel like fearful and are left out. There was a thing, I saw Anderson Cooper was asked to put his cell phone down instead of checking it for emails, you know, every few seconds, and asked him how did he feel. He said, I felt stressed and fearful. I was missing out. I might miss something, you know. And he said it was horrible. So you can become, when something is taken away or there's a change in your life, okay, and you can become addicted to depression, okay. There's a lot of benefits in mental health. There are people that enjoy it because they don't have to work. They get a lot of sympathy. It's always a poor woe is me. I'm the victim, and they don't have to be responsible for changing their life, doing anything. They don't have to change their diet, maybe go and lose weight or stop eating high sugary things. If you eat a lot of sugar stuff, your body goes up, and then when all that sugar is out of your system, you come crashing down. So there's a lot. So depression is a biological, chemical thing, can be. And that's where your primary care doctor should check you out. And if he can't find anything, you know, that's amiss, and everything seems to be in balance and your blood seems to be okay, you can have low blood pressure. You can have not okay. You can have many other things. And that is making you feel tired that you don't want to do, you don't know. So you go do that thorough examination. If you've had any head traumas, you want to have that checked out. Your age is very important. Some people don't want to get old. Some people then become depressed because they don't look like they used to. And life seems boring. They're just waiting for the grave. And other people are afraid of dying, and they want to be young, so they get depressed. And they're trying everything they know to do. They're having animal support systems. They're, you know, going on group support. A lot of people that are older don't stay in therapy with a good therapist and do the cognitive, the mind work, and learn a new language within themselves. They maybe don't know that maybe they need to adjust their diet. Maybe they're better off in the morning, and they need to not do anything after 4 o'clock so they can rest. And their biochemistry, that everybody's different. Some people can go with 6 hours of sleep, and some people need 8 to 10. And so they need to know themselves a little bit more. So there's mental health involved, and there's biology. So they should be checking it out. And if you tell your primary care doctor, I've had trauma in my childhood, and I'd like to see a therapist, okay, because I'm having troubles, they'll refer you. And there's plenty of help in all sorts of ways. Now you can do it on Zoom. You can do it over the phone. You don't even have to go into an appointment. You don't have to wear a mask. Just sit at home and talk. Lots of books to read, who people who have been depressed and have found all sorts of alternative ways to come out of it. Some change their diet. Some change their friends. Some change their activities. You know, so there's a multitude of ways. But the first thing is, yes, I always ask people, do you want to stay depressed or do you want to get well? Then we might need to look at the medical, see if there's any biological that could have a brain tumor, could have had a stroke and you don't even know it. Blood pressure could be low. Could be the medication if you're on some for something else. Your blood sugar could be very low. Maybe you just had a death in the family, okay? And you're feeling the depression of being alone or older, and you don't want to be. And so, you know, all of that affects you. So there are all sorts of self-care. If you get, there's plenty, probably books. Lottie, if you typed in Google or YouTube, self-help for depression, what is depression? There's plenty of websites, plenty of centers that have the definitions to them. You can look it up in the dictionary, and you can begin understanding it, that it might just be, you know, the time that they talk about seasonal depression. During the holidays, okay, or when the light in the wintertime, there's not enough light for the body to get it, so you feel more like wanting, like the bears wanting to go into hibernation. Mm-hmm. And so you have to look at it all and have some quality people that are professionals helping you to figure out, is it a biological plus emotional? Is it coming from the childhood abuse plus biological? What it is, so you can get a proper sort of guideline to how to remedy it. And those that are suicide, you know, a lot of that, they see no hope. Whatever is going on in their family, the family members can't help them. They believe inside themselves, okay, that there's just no hope. And we got the suicide lines, and there's a lot of help now. And a lot of times they're going to put them on antidepressant medication, maybe anti-anxiety medication. There's fear in there. And then they're going to start doing the therapy work, talking to them, working through the traumas, working through the issues, working, you know, slowly through the memories and the thoughts, helping them to learn. And they come up some other things to do besides, you know, try to kill you.
Okay, let's slow down a little bit here now. Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here. Number one, people have to get the physical out of the way. They have to get the mental out of the way. They have to get the emotional. There's all different ways that the things that cause, you know, depression.
Uh-huh.
And for someone, you know, like it can be situational, any trauma, relationships. Okay, falls apart, and the person cannot handle life because of the relationship falling apart. Maybe they love their spouse more than their spouse loves them. Loss of a loved one, someone who died.
Mm-hmm.
That's a biggie also.
A dog, too? A pet?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, some dogs, you know, your pets, you bet.
Oh,
there's all different kinds of things.
You lose your house during a fire, a tornado, or a hurricane, it lost.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I do want to discuss, and I'm going to go to the panel, okay? Again, the number here is 646-595-2118. You want to learn about depression, come up with solutions, talk about it. We're right here, okay? The 10 signs of depression, okay, are actually aloofness and isolation, okay? That's number one. Number two, few or maybe no friends. Number three, maybe you've already been labeled as being antisocial. Number four, canceling social events at the last moment. Don't want to be around people, right? Number five, avoiding face-to-face contact. Maybe you can't make eye contact anymore. Number six, friends and families are starting to notice there's a difference in you, and they're starting to get nervous. Number seven, you become very pessimistic, okay? You have too much pessimism. Number eight, low self-esteem. You suffer all of a sudden from low self-esteem. Maybe you didn't before, but you do now, okay? Number nine, loss of interest to what used to bring joy. Can lose interest in marriage or children, work, or the chores that used to be able to do, okay? Now, there's nine right there. And then also, two, because of that, because of those nine things, and then, of course, suicidal ideations, yes, you can very much. I suffered from suicidal ideations when I was a teenager. It was awful, and it lasted quite a while. Because of these problems that we're listing here, then people, because they need to feel better, maybe they've already tried going out for a walk, going to the movies, if people do that anymore, but, you know, something different, whatever, to try and bring themselves up out of that slump, because they don't like most people, not all people, you know, like Deborah said, not all people. Some people do like to be in that that slump, but, you know, feel sorry for me and all this other stuff. But most people are so miserable feeling that way. That's where the suicidal ideations do come in. And also, too, they may try things to you know, to get them to be happy, and they can't, okay, they can't. So then they turn to other things like alcohol or drug use. They do suffer terribly from mood swings. I didn't, but I'm a pretty basic little level person. I don't have mood swings. But changes in appetite, absolutely. I can eat too much or I can eat too little. Excessive tiredness, oh, yes. I can sit, watch a movie. In the middle of the movie, I'm gone. Forget about it. I don't remember what the movie was about. You know, I have to watch something that's happy and uplifting, like Mom. I like Mom. I think they're funny. They're alcoholics, that figures. I like them. That's a funny show. And but other shows like that, you know, that kind of helps me. I have sleep problems. Everyone knows I'm the night owl. Well, why am I the night owl? That's when a lot of my trauma took place, wasn't it? Not all of it, but a lot of it. Then cognitive problems, trouble concentrating. People have trouble concentrating. This is what all turns into self-harm. a person can become so depressed that, of course, they might try to commit suicide. I tried it once and got caught. All right. And you do suffer from suicidal ideations. So those are the things there that people do, absolutely can and do suffer from. And on www.bestresultstoday.com/web_results/, you'll find out a whole bunch of this, all right, of what I just read, because I'm always looking things up, and I do an awful lot of work that way. I'm going to go to the panel, and I'm going to ignore my phone. It's constantly ringing, my cell phone. I'm sorry about this. Yeah, well, they'll just have to wait. I'm running a show here, people. Go away. All right. Let me go first to Pamela, okay? Pamela, you're a nurse, and you're also a social worker. And what do you have to say about any and all of this?
Well, thank you for letting me talk. And mm-hmm. Good to hear from you, Dr. Schleck, and you, Carol, and Mark, of mm-hmm. course. The subject is depression. If I'm not mistaken, depression is like the number one mental health issue, I believe. Is that right, Dr. Schleck?
Pretty much,
yeah. Depression. Yeah. So, we've talked about depression for many years, and there's a lot of good things, like Carol just said, to help with depression. My understanding as a nurse and psychiatric nurse is that there's like three types of depression, the unipolar, the bipolar mm-hmm. 1, and the bipolar 2. And mm-hmm. so I was going to ask Dr. Schleck if she would talk to those three forms of depression.
Good.
Okay.
Go ahead.
When you say the word bi, that means two, polar, okay, means that we are supposed to be happy, but what happens is there's different levels of depression. When you are doing the diagnosing, you're going to ask them, well, how long have you felt like this? We're looking for, have you felt like this for longer than 6 months? Okay, that's number one. Then, like my bipolar means that you probably have something else usually with it, like manic, okay? It means uh-huh. you swing from being super, super happy, agitated, just going, don't need any sleep, going, happy, happy, happy. And you do that for a while, could be weeks or days, and then that sort of fades and you fall, I just want to stay in the bed. That's bipolar, the two things. We're all swinging. We have sometimes during the day, we're tired, something just happened. We got a moment of thoughts of depression. And then we got to get up and go do something. Oh, we hear good news. So we're back in the manic. As a therapist, we want to find out, how long have you felt like this? What were some of the things that you stopped doing? Okay, my brother was diagnosed as manic depressive. Okay, bipolar. That means you've got both of them. They're both intense. When you get in the manic stage, I don't need sleep. I don't need to eat. I can stay up all night, okay? It's called manic. And certain hormones and chemicals are sort of overstimulated in your body. Then they wane out, and then you sort of crash. The body says, I can't go anymore. Okay, I got nothing to give, no sugar. My cortisol for my kidneys, my stress hormones, they are wore out. I've used everything, and you go into that thing. So the therapist is looking for what else is there with depression. Okay, mm-hmm. another thing, maybe anxiety. Okay, mm-hmm. So they're looking for dual diagnosis, I think. It's been so long since I've done this diagnosing. about the different depressions. I used to give the Beck depression scale because a therapist is going to do that to see how you answer certain questions, and there's a lot of them, to see if your answers are coming up, you know, they score it to be depressive. And then they're looking to see if there's other things connected, situational. Did this happen just when your mom died? And you were pretty good before that. That would be like situational depression. Have you had this since childhood? Have you been on medication? So what therapists do is they rule out a lot and they rule in things. They change the diagnosis over time as they gather. Because not all of your patients are very truthful or forthcoming about their information. Because they really don't want to tell the therapist or the doctor. They're more afraid, if I do, you're going to give me a pill and drug me up. You're going to label me, you know, mentally insane, take my rights away. You're going to lose my job. You're going to tell everybody. And, you know, so it becomes a very secretive thing, and most patients are not forthcoming to the therapist about, okay? And they know if they get a diagnosis, I don't know if you guys were around there for a long time, there was no HIPAA. Employers could find out about your diagnosis and you could be fired. Your family could find out and you'd be sent off to the state sanatorium. Husbands could get a divorce from this. You might lose your kids because you were mentally diagnosed with that. You were seen as an outcast. You were seen as not normal. Everybody else is dealing with situational deaths in their family, sickness, losses. How come they're not trying to kill themselves and you are? There must be something wrong. And so people hide that because there's such a...
Let's stop there for a second. Deborah, let me say something about that, what you just said, because that brings in forth, actually, with trauma and abuse. There are some people, myself included, all right, that we get so abused, we become so abused, we're raped, we have incest in the family, we're raped on the outside of the family, maybe all both of them, you know, and all this other stuff, and all of a sudden, the mind just says, no more. Because you're still a kid, you know. I was 17 when I tried to commit suicide. And it just seemed like to be no hope, okay, hope. Now, that might put people in a different category because I've had people say, well, what about situational, you know, environmental? Of course, I deal with that. And, you know, how does that factor in? You know, with people who, say, are mentally ill or they want to kill themselves, they're suffering from suicidal ideations and all this other stuff.
When you have childhood trauma and you get to that point that everybody that's supposed to be protecting you is not doing that or they are abusing you, you're being somehow a child knows. This is not right. My mother, father, whoever they are, could be even, you know, an aunt or an uncle. They are supposed to protect me. Mm-hmm. And so the trauma is you are rejected. You are not, the parental is not there protecting. And the love that the child desires and somehow instinctively knows it's to have, it's not getting it. So when it stays within the family or our friends or neighbors and it goes on a long time, the child will split into personalities. All the personalities that they kind of have a family meeting, one will take the abuse and then that one will say, that's what I'm supposed to do. The other ones, they just see no, and they stay a child in the cognitive areas of them. Even if they're a grown adult, an event occurs that they feel a divorce, they feel rejected. All that comes back, because that's not what's supposed to happen. Somebody dies, they lose a job, they're getting older, okay? So what happens is the deep cognitive inside of a person is still not healed, even if they're in therapy. Most therapists are not trained how to do that. They get training. They try hypnosis, eye movement to retrain your thoughts, which is a form of hypnosis, to get the very deep subconscious to believe something else. They don't have a lot of training in multiple personalities, disassociation. They just started in the last maybe 5 years addressing adverse childhood experiences and how that affects and traumatizes children. Maybe your parents divorced. My brother was traumatized because we moved every 2 years in the military. No permanent friends. Okay? Traumatized. And mom and dad gone to officer stuff. Left with babysitters. I mean, no. And so the child is re-traumatized over through many different ways, and it's lost, and there's no hope this is ever going to end. I try to be as good as I can, and it's still the same. And eventually, the cognitive thoughts and sort of the family says, we can't do this anymore. The world out there is mean and ugly, and nobody loves us. Nobody cares for us or helps us, so we might as well just die. And that goes on in the inside. Most therapists are not trained to see it, to hear it. Okay, you can do sort of a quick in the suicide. A stranger on the phone can say, I love you, I want you, but it may not be enough. Because a lot of times, that desire to be out of the pain, free, at peace, is more powerful than living. And a lot of people make that choice. Some are doing it in slow motion with drugs, alcohol, other kinds of things. They're doing the self-suicide. If you leave them alone, they'll eat themselves to death, or they'll kill themselves with too much sugar. Or drugs. It's sort of a self. It's a way of getting peace. It's a way of, I'm going to solve my problems I have. I'm doing the best I can. Okay? I may have to for a moment. And they don't. And to some people, death seems a whole lot. They've heard enough about maybe a peaceful God, going to a garden and being a rose in it and being loved and it's beautiful. And they want that. And they don't want this family, this existence, this world. They've been to doctors. They don't want to be on medication. Maybe they've been to therapists. And they're not helping. And the only way they know to get this, we'll say, love and peace they're looking for is to end their pain. That's all.
Yeah.
And some do fast.
Let me say something to that. Let me say something to that, and then we'll go back to the panel. What you're saying is very, very true. You know, we tend to be magnets, you know, all of us, until we grow up, I guess, you know, to people who were abused also, okay? And I remember as a kid, my friends were always from dysfunctional homes, and because I felt very much at home in their home, because their home was as bad as my home, okay? So
it's
I didn't
familiar,
have to prove myself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And we used to actually sit around, the five of us. I called us the Fab Five. We were also singers, and we sang in New York and stuff, and that was the only good highlights of our life. But the point is we would sit around when we weren't out there, and we would think about ways, this is terrible, to think about ways of committing suicide. Well, how would you do it? And how would you do it? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't like blood, that's what one would say, so I'm not going to stab myself or I'm not going to cut my wrist. And the other one said, oh, I just pop some pills and let it all go away. Because we were all in that same mindset because our homes were so terribly dysfunctional. And there didn't seem to be any answers. There were no changes. There were no solutions. And we were kids that just didn't know what to do. And we became very delinquent, a lot of us. Some of them ended up in jail. A couple of them died. I mean, some OD'd. I mean, this is what I used to see out on the street. And, you know, the world that we're living in today, it's what are we teaching our children? They can go out, they can loot and all this other stuff. You know, they can do this, they can do that. And it's okay. Well, it's not okay. It's like boundaries have been taken away. And these kids are not happy kids that are doing it, or happy groups of people that are doing it without saying names. But they go and they do it. What was their childhood like? And
well,
I would say,
is you have
you only
to
get
to
Mark
into,
in a second. Go ahead.
You got to get into the parenting. And if you
exactly.
notice, you watch all the news and stuff, they don't want to go there. And there's actually a thing called suicide by cop. Some people will force the police to shoot them because they want to die. Okay? They just don't want to do it themselves. And so what happens is when a child is born into whatever family, most of the families they do not have good histories. Their parents don't know parenting or child development classes. They only know that my mom was bitter and angry and hurtful, and it from her life, and it came into the family. So children, sometimes they are the ones the mother is jealous of, and sometimes the mother, she grew up during a culture, you marry whatever you marry, and you married just to get out of the home because it was abusive. And, and so there are generational things that the parents have learned. I didn't take any child development classes when I was in junior high school or high school. There was nothing if you're planning on being a parent. I didn't get that until college. So children are born into cultures, faith, people who are ignorant. They're just doing what they were taught, what they were shown, the roles, and their hearts have not been touched. They're evil, wicked, okay? They do evil, wicked things. A lot of women do not like having children because she was sexually abused to have them. She don't like them. Her body changes. She has chores to do, and based on their culture, where her role is with the husband, okay? So they take it out on the kids, and they let the man do whatever he wants to do. So the child is thrown into families, and the child has an instinct knowledge, though. I'm supposed to be loved. I'm supposed to be happy. I'm supposed to be protected. And when and my mother, who I came out of her womb, neglects me or allows me to be abused or rejects me or whatever is cruel, it starts that child abuse. And then what happens, it's like you just got, you're a prey, and you just keep getting bombarded and bombarded. And what happens is when you become an adult, okay, a lot of it affects your biological body. You get arthritis, heart problems. You have cognitive memory problems. Your blood pressure is not. Maybe a lot of women put on weight so they will not be sexually attracted to any man okay? And then they put on weight so if they get hit or beaten, they can't break the ribs. You can kick me anywhere, but it ain't going to break my ribs. Then to some people, this is what the family is. And that's all they know, and a different kind of family, say, a loving family, is unfamiliar. They don't know the rules. You're going to hurt me if you marry a man, you know, that kind of thing. And there's a lot of great, true biographies of people, children who have lived through this. Some of them, like Sybil, and is a great one to watch, a mother who the whole town knew what she was doing, but she was so powerful. And Joanne Woodward played it, and Three Faces of Eve. There was not sexual abuse, but it was a trauma of kissing her dead grandmother that split her. So children are affected by the parents, the culture, the faith, what is going on. Some, like kissing dead grandma, was a way you wouldn't mourn. But to this child, it was the most horrendous thing. And mom and dad didn't know. But then other people, you know, they're the women. It's not all men that do this kissing. There's brothers that do it and sisters do it. Mamas do it.
But I always say, too, well, we're going to stop for a minute here. I always say, too, because I want Mark to have a chance to speak and to, you know, answer what he has or ask a question or whatever. I always say, look at the family first. And that even goes to those who are bullies. Okay.
Well, they tried that, Carol, in the 1970s or 80s. Adults were getting into therapy. And they were having memories of being abused by their parents. And the therapist encouraged them to, say, file legal charges against the parents. So they did. The parents said, we never did it. Our child was always the problem. And that's when the false memory syndrome arose and started an organization, and therapists were being blamed that they were implanting through hypnosis, visualization, cognitive work, these ideas into these adult children that their parents had abused them. And so lawsuits were flying back and forth, and a lot of your therapists backed away from dealing with this and promoting lawsuits because they didn't want to get sued, and they just, it was easier to just give you an antidepressant medication, send you to a psychiatrist, put you in an inpatient program, and then we don't talk about the parents.
That even got changed in the DSM book. I remember that.
Yes, ma'am.
Of what you're speaking about, yes, you and I know that. I remember that. I remember hearing about it and so forth, and also watching and being part of it.
Do you know where the DSM comes from? It is regulated by the World Health Organization, Department of Psychiatry. Medical doctors, homosexuality used to be in there as an abnormal mental health disease. Okay? But the criteria to be diagnosed with a mental health disease is this. One, you must have it for at least 6 months. Two, you must be unable to work. Three, you must be unable to maintain a family and a job. Okay? And if those were affected, then you had a mental health issue. So the gay, the homosexuals came in and said, we've been in a committed partnership with one person for 20, 30 years, so that doesn't apply to our behaviors. We are holding down high-tech computer jobs. We're working, contributing to society. So your criteria for classifying, because remember the old was you're a lunatic, you have lunacy, you are disabled, and you cannot work. That was what a mental health disease was. And so the homosexuals lobbied, the World Health Organization and psychiatrists took it out. This is not a mental health. So, yes, this whole mental health and thing is always evolving, changing things
right.
are going in and coming out. But there's a lot that you can do to self-help yourself. And I
there was a big upheaval. You know, I remember that there was a big upheaval in the DSM with the book and all of the
mm-hmm.
opinions of those
yes.
that were in charge. He's coughing awful badly. I only have Mark on here. Are you all right?
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
Are you sure? Maybe a drink of water? I don't know. Okay, listen.
And they change over, like, every so often, the DSM, which is, it has numbers in it. And when you
yes.
rule in major depression, it has certain criteria. Now, you
Absolutely.
Can have major depression with
right.
other things, three or four other things at the same time.
There's different levels. What you're speaking about
yes,
is the different
yes.
levels of depression. Yeah, I want
yes.
to. I understand that because I worked it. But let's get Mark on because he hasn't been on yet. Okay, and maybe he'd like to ask you a question or make a comment.
Oh, sure. I think I have a question, and I hope I'm not repeating something that you had said, Dr. Schlick. But okay, I read somewhere or heard it. That in the first 6 years of a child, their mind, their brain is developing, you know, rapidly, and that when there is serious trauma, say, and, you know, a lot of children are abused at the ages of even infant, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, does that cause a problem in their development, and then can that cause depression throughout their life? And yet, as a small child, I don't think anyone ever really diagnoses a child as having depression. But when you get older, is it fester that long, and it results back to childhood of an abused child? And then, is it always the case, or can you get depression even by not being abused?
Okay,
mm-hmm.
The first question. I'll just tell you, to answer that, I'm going to tell you what. We had a multimillionaire here. We had a certain minority people who had children, and you're to get them ready to go into kindergarten. They discovered that these minority kids were already so far behind other non-minority children. The parents did not read to them, which developed neurons and brain cells, and help that developing brain to develop, okay? They didn't read, didn't help them learn words and vocabulary. So when they got to kindergarten, and they're supposed to know their name, their street, they didn't know it. Their brain was underdeveloped because they learned that by speaking, okay, and purposely teaching out of books or spelling, the brain is forming in childhood, you know, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, up to about age 5. The first parents are the family and the relatives, their culture, what happened. And we learn in mental health by the time a child enters kindergarten at 5, 85% of their brain is developed. Their value system of authority is developed from the parent. So they found out if what they do to every newborn baby's mama, they give them what they call a brain bag. Take these books, read to your child, talk appropriately. The ears are hearing, the brain is developing. So if you get in childhood abuse, yelling, whatever is going on, the biological brain can be stunted. The normal growth that should be happening does not happen. The cells, the neurons that need to be growing and developing can be stunted. Okay? So, yes,
right.
when they grow up, what they have, okay, is all they got. And it doesn't grow anymore. Then if you also A child is like, I see it in Walmart. A child is in the car, they're uncomfortable, they want mom's attention, they're crying, mom ignores them, yells at them, it gives them a sugary drink to calm them down, give them food. The child learns at 2. When I'm upset, I eat. You put on the weight. You get sugar in there. I'm being rejected. I want comfort. And you're giving me food, okay? So that's going on. The biological brain is affected by crying, the cortisol, the stress, fear, adrenaline. Okay, it's all being affected, the bone growth, okay, everything is that the diet, okay, it's all being affected in those early years. Mm-hmm. And then as we know, the brain has, it keeps growing, our skull, our bones, okay, if you don't have calcium and your, now, no parent gets this about how much water is your brain supposed to have? How much sleep? Okay, so if you don't know any of that, the baby can be dehydrated. The brain isn't getting enough. And if it's not getting the right kind of stimulus to build those neurons, yes, a child goes into, you see it when you get into kindergarten and kids can't talk. They don't know their street name. They have no clue. They barely speak English, okay? And that carries on with them. And they drop out of school. They get off, and okay? Now, you throw childhood abuse, sexual, on top of that. It's going to stunt the brain. It's going to hurt the growth. They may overeat. They may undereat. They may not sure if they should eat or even move. They live in constant fear. When you're in fear, you're in that flight or fight. Adrenaline glands are overworking all the time. You're going to try to run away inside, but you can't. But the adrenal glands are working. Your stress hormones, okay, are working. All kinds of things. And when that subsides, it takes about, the police will tell you, if they get called, and somebody is on an adrenaline high, acting up, you can't talk to them until that adrenaline, it takes about 36 hours to subside. Okay, they're all worked up, stressed out, fearful, whatever. You can't talk to them. They're like wild creatures. And a child, if they live in that, in abuse, you can never really talk to them. They're on edge all the time, waiting for somebody to move, because they might have to, okay? And they live in that constant state of fear, rejection. And it does affect the biological brain and growth, and, of course, the cognitive thoughts and emotions that's going on in there. So time you get down into your, you know, elementary school, and then it's like what Carol said, there seems to be, you attract those very same kind of people because that's the only ones you know how to live around and you know the rules. If somebody's nice to you, you're still waiting for them to abuse you.
Right.
So you live in that constant fear. When you live in that fear, your adrenaline glands are working, your cortisol, you're in a heightened moment all the time. Your heart's beating faster, even though we can't see it. You're living in an atmosphere of fear and dread, and it will biologically change your system. You might have medical problems that the doctors can't figure out. Children at age 5 can be clinically depressed, okay? They can be, say if you're born early, and you have feeding tubes, and you're always having medical procedures, you're going to have a lot of feelings of fear. I can't control anything. Okay, you might be puking, can't sit at the table, can't eat early. And so you're not getting the right nutrition. They call you a picky eater, but you're afraid your food might be poisoned. Or maybe you would get medicine, okay, that would put you out and you were afraid it would. As early as 3 and 4, children are smart, so it does affect them. Does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am. I think, you know, just check me if I'm wrong. So what you're saying is in the first 5 years of a child are really the most important as far as development of the brain. And I would think that people should know that and be aware of that.
Did you get that? Most parents say, the only place we could get it, elementary school, I think in junior high school, maybe we got something about sex education, okay, about how a baby is formed. But they didn't talk to me about having my period. They didn't talk about puberty of males. They didn't talk about pregnancy, child development. So we were ignorant. And the only information we had, I went to the library to read. My parents did not talk. There was nothing on television about it. There was no medical programs. Okay? And so the parents don't know. Some of them are acting out of their religion. This is what you're to do to a child. Some it's culture. This is what granny did. Some are saying, this is the only way this is how I was raised. What's the big deal? Okay? And they don't know what it's doing biologically. Mm-hmm. And I do a lot of teaching, and, everybody loves a little baby, but then it starts crying. And the mama, she's so immature, she don't want it to cry. Give it a bottle. And then you give it a cookie. Okay, and then they become addicted when they're discomforted. And that can be a form of child abuse. They want something. They don't get it, and they're given a drug, food, sugar, or a slap of the back of the hand. And some children, they get turned on, their sex hormones get turned on before they're ready, and they're stimulated, and they have orgasms, even though they were penetrated or it was violent, the body with the nerves respond. And there is a peace and a, okay? So it's, and that's going on, even though how you got there may have been wrong. But this is my daddy or my mommy or my brother or my, who loves me. So now love is all mixed up. But yet your body's chemicals are experiencing the peace of an orgasm, the nerves, all the chemicals, okay? Your eyes see things they shouldn't see, but they don't call it. If you learn, a man doesn't call things what they're lollipops. Or we're going to just go for a horsey ride. And the child doesn't know any difference, but the biological body gets stimulated. It has nerves. And those nerves go right to the brain to get chemicals turned on. And they don't understand it, and they start craving that. And that's where sometimes you have sex addicts. And they're looking for that.
Let's
peace.
Stop there for a second. Let's hold on there, because that's a very important point. Going back years ago, nannies were actually, I've mentioned this once before on the show, but nannies were caught actually masturbating the children that they they were, you know, watching so that they would relax and go to sleep, okay?
That's right. Oh, and they also used to put bourbon and whiskey in the bottle.
Oh, sure. And there was that going on, too. Oh, they caught them doing all kinds of stuff.
Yep. And parents also did that.
This absolutely, you know, has a difference on a child's mind, because then their outlook on sex, you know, as what it's supposed to be, something that's loving and sexual, but between, you know, a man and a woman, or whatever, a significant other at these days, you know, what it's supposed to be. And children were, yes, stimulated at a very, very early age, and they didn't understand it. And you're right, they did crave it, and they wanted more of it. And that there is some correlation between the sex addict and a person who is maybe older who gets sexually abused.
Well,
because,
what you're thinking is that
yeah.
from the orgasm that goes
mm-hmm.
off in the brain that releases all these chemicals, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have to
right.
get there, okay? And a drug
mm-hmm.
addict's trying to find that same level of peace for the brain. And at
right.
the same time, a lot of people learned, you know, who were doing the abusing, they had issues. And they probably were abused when they were children and from there. So it's a generational thing. And yet nobody talks about it, and that's why NASCA's so good. But you have to go back to the child's culture also. And sometimes, you know, like over in other countries, they
mm-hmm.
actually do genital mutilization on the females because the
no.
men do not want them to enjoy sex
mm-hmm.
because they are afraid they will run off, and so they do that very early on. Okay, that is a cultural thing. In
yes.
from people from India and Pakistan, the man believes he wants to make love, not to a. I asked this man in the gym. He was working out, but not his wife. And his belief was, if she's too thin, I'm having sex with a bag of bones. And I don't want that. I want her plump.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So there's a lot of ideas about sex, cultural things, the role of the man, the woman. You know, and if you look, a lot of women, like Loretta Lynn was married at 13 or 14. She knew
yeah.
nothing. She
mm-hmm.
had to get her a book. She didn't understand sex, what it was. She had never had it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women in cultures, as soon as they have their periods, they are ready to be married. Okay? And that's the law, and that's the culture. They might be 10. 11, in some cultures, they're 11-year-olds having babies.
That's right.
Okay.
See,
and they don't know how to deal with
if
it.
If people, let me say something there. I know I'm going to go to Pamela because she hasn't had a chance to speak much. But in sociology, they speak about the cultural because that's what it is. You know, all the different countries, they all have, you know, different ideas. And now they're trying to bring back, and I'm going to say this, you know, I have a big mouth. They're trying to, in some states, they're actually trying to lower the ages where children, and that's what they are, you know, can actually get married. They're trying to bring some of that back in and into our country, and that is not right. When a 14-year-old or a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old is able to get married, okay, they certainly don't have their brain is not functioning properly. They say it's 25, 26 years old before the full, brain is formed. And they have no choices. They have nothing. And their children, it's like a form of slavery because they have to listen to a man who could be their grandfather almost, okay? And that's disgusting.
And that's
Let's go.
When you... Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, she has
when
a chance
you get
to speak.
Into, okay, when you get into, we'll say, depression, you are still
mm-hmm.
dealing with cultural definitions, what
mm-hmm.
families believe. Well, just
mm-hmm.
suck it up, pull it up. Hey, nobody in our family is going to be met. You're still dealing with the culture, faith, what happens in society. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Pam. Go ahead. Do you have a question or a comment you want to make?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, and I don't know if anybody knows, but why does a pedophile want to cause a small child to have an orgasm? What's
okay.
behind that?
when you deal with when you deal with pedophiles, you're dealing with, according to the Bible, the lust of the eyes. He's trying to prove that he's a kind, loving person, and that this is love. And also there's like a part of him knows that if I can get their body to have an orgasm, then they'll be addicted. You know, the bodies around, all of our body orifices, our mouth, everything, has nerve endings. It's very sensitive. And their job at the same time is to get this child into that, and having to come to him to get that relief. They sort of become like the drug pusher. I got something you need, and I will give you this wonderful gift, and you will, and this will be so pleasurable, won't hurt you, and all that body chemistry and neurons shooting off, okay, and everything. And you'll feel great. Was probably done to him. And they look at the child as they need to grow up. They're innocent. This is how we show love. You know, it's all twisted. And to some people, that is love. That's
right.
How you
show
love. Love.
Mm-hmm. Another question is, like, say children are in, like, pre-K, first K-1, first grade, second grade, third grade. Can, like, when people sexually abuse them, can they be diagnosed with depression during that time? I mean,
yes. Yeah. If they're normal, what they usually would tell, if we had learned this in high school, mm-hmm. and let's say a child gets bullied school, and their appetite changes, their sleeping habits change. If they've been sexually abused, something's going to change. The light, the glimmer in their little eyes seems to disappear. They don't smile as much. They're more secretive. Maybe their clothes change. Their eating habits change. Maybe they don't want you in the bathroom with them anymore. Or maybe they get more sexualized in their words, or if you watch them with their toys, they're having sex with their toys.
Can a parent take them in to find this out if they're clinically depressed?
Yes.
So that's children can be diagnosed clinically depressed.
And they can put them on medication very early. And now they may not know. The parents may have no clue that when they stayed over at Grandma and Grandpa's house, that it was Grandpa or Grandma. Okay, they don't know. They just know the child is different, and they seem not to be as joyful, and there's something wrong, okay? And they take them to the doctor, and, of course, you know, Mom and Dad would never accuse their own mom and dad. Maybe they would. Don't know, but yes, they can be.
Right. Okay, one more question, and I'm going to not ask any more. Why sometimes does a suicidal patient get real happy before they commit suicide? It looks like they're...
Carol, can you answer that one?
Oh, yes,
Carol?
I can answer that. Because I caught a girl. I was wise to that when I went to detention. There was one girl that was more quiet and, you know, stuck to herself, and the kids were bullying her and all this other stuff right in detention. We had to have lockdown a couple times because terrible fights would break out. And then all of a sudden, the same girl became totally opposite. And she was a very good artist. And they would allow for her to draw pictures. Well, she was drawing pictures to people that she liked. I was one of them. And she said, here, this is a gift. I'm giving this to you. And she was just totally different. Now, this girl's mother had passed. She died at a very early age. And this girl here was only 16 years old. she had come to the realization that she didn't want to live anymore. Her brother was on the boy's side. They were both in detention. So, all right. So she decided that she wanted to be with her mother. That was going to be the solution to her problem.
Uh-huh.
And she was sure that her mother was such a wonderful person, and maybe she was, uh-huh. that she just wanted to be with her mother. So all of a sudden her uh-huh. demeanor changed. She changed. So she went from a morose type of personality to a child that was bubbly. And I thought, uh-oh. And
yeah.
sure enough, I went to work an hour earlier. The next day, I wasn't even covered by, you know, by anything. I was there an hour too early. Insurance wouldn't have covered me if something happened. But I didn't care. I knew something was going to happen. And, yes, that girl had taken one of the county, that was a county slash state job, and the sheets were so thin, she had taken a piece of it and was able to rip a pretty large, long, you know, strip of sheet. And she had it tied around. I went to her cell immediately when I got in there. I said, look, we have to go check on her and see what happens here. And sure enough, she was just about dead. And I couldn't get it off of her. They had to use a special scissor to get that. It was so wrapped so tightly around her neck. So, you see, I was going to say something earlier. Yes, there can be a mood swing in the sense of the behavior of someone who's going to commit suicide. They can go from being morose and isolated, to turning the exact opposite. And that you have to be careful about, because that person was then at peace. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah,
and
they were at peace.
And sometimes, you know, they've made their decision. And mm-hmm. this is the only thing, and they want to be with a family. I think Anna Nicole Smith, she sort of did mm-hmm. the same thing. Her son had died. She was so afraid he wouldn't find his way to wherever, and she wanted to be with him. She had a child. And sometimes it's that love. She was a drug addict and stuff, but sometimes that is their only solution out of pain, loneliness. And they do change.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a personality that comes forth? Can be. Can it just finally they've made a decision that is theirs and theirs alone, and they want out. They want to be with other people that they think love them, and it is a lot better than living. And so yes, they do change. They've made a decision. And so, and a lot of times they'll tell you no, they haven't, but they have. And some of them, you know, you can't stop them. Life is, you know, just it's not there for them. You'll see them later and stuff like that. So, as a therapist, we were, by law, we had to, if they admitted, you know, that they had suicidal thoughts, didn't matter what age,
right.
We had to ask them if they had a plan and anything. If we did, we had to get them right over to the psychiatric hospital and have a psychiatrist admit them. And, you know, they can just, the human mind and its cognition and our hormones can only take so much before, and some people have resilience and they will make it through. And they just got this grit in them, and they got an attitude that goes, you ain't going to get me. I want to live. Others don't have that fighting spirit. They are just too hurt, too abused. Some of them get locked up in mental health issues. They go catatonic. Some
yeah.
of them just lose it to all kinds of voices, and, you know, some of them just get lost in drugs and alcohol, but they kind of want to live because they're not taking their life, you know, and some of them just, they don't know what to do. They get frozen, sort of what we call catatonic. They get
That's right.
stuck in a position, unable to budge or move.
their thoughts, they're frozen, sort of in fear. So a lot of a therapist has to, if you ever go work in a psychiatric hospital, a state asylum, it's excellent. If you talk to, you know, watch, there's a lot to learn. But childhood abuse has major biological, neurological, emotional, and physical effect on a child, on their growth.
Absolutely.
They may have early puberty or delayed puberty. They also kick hormones get turned on due to orgasm and pleasure in the nerves before time.
That's right.
Their brain can't comprehend what all these feelings are. Love is messed up. I'm not protected, but they're supposed to love me. Is this normal? Is this what a daddy does? Is this what? And it's just total confusion.
Absolutely.
They, most of them make it through, okay, but they end up in a big mess. And that's, you know, therapy has been trying to help them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Hold on a second there. With that girl that I was speaking about, she, after she got out of detention, unfortunately, she did kill herself, and that was very, very sad. Sometimes you just can't stop it, okay? The person is too far down, like you say. They're too far gone. And,
the only hope is they see death not as the end of something.
It might be the beginning.
The end of this earth and this pain, and they've got just enough that maybe there's another place where I'll be loved and happy. I'll be out of this pain that I've tried to stop and fix in this family, and that's all they know to do. It's a form of escape to a better place.
Yes. It's very, very, very sad, Deborah, very sad. I witnessed two girls there. One girl drank Quell. I knew she was going to do it. I was right. She was pregnant. Okay, she came in pregnant. We admitted her. And we didn't know she was pregnant at the time. She almost died. And I caught one over at Greystone Psychiatric. She was only about 22. And I knew she was missing too much. She was an open ward. And I had to go find her. I went to find her, and I caught her. So you have to really keep your eyes open, you know. If you know the signs of suicide, and if there's a change in behavior in a person and you don't understand it, for heaven's sake, go get help with this person, your child, if it's a child, because there's something going on. Again, if they're very, very inward, isolated, and then they become totally bubbly, and this girl's case at detention, the first one I mentioned, she wanted to be with her mother. That's why she was at peace. And she was struggling before, so to her, her solution was, yes, to commit that suicide, and boy, she almost made it at that point and did finally later on. Okay, I just wanted to let people know that, Robert or Ron had dropped off. He had been on. We have Roberta. Roberta, hi. And Avian is here, too. I think she's just listening. Roberta, say hi, and you've been listening for about the last 10 minutes, I think. Is there something that you want to ask a question of Pastor Deborah, or you want to make a comment?
Well, I was just listening to a lot, and I think I've I just wanted to say, I just wanted to tell her that that it wasn't until probably about 10 months ago that I decided I didn't want to live in fear. And ever since then, it's like I want to live now. And I mean, there was a time that where I couldn't. I mean, it was just so whatever you call it, whatever you call that, where
catatonic.
It was just so where I was stuck. And now, you know, it's like, well, I'm out of all that now. And what I do, all I'm doing right now is praying, you know, and listening to y'all and going to recovery and trying to stay away from the people that abuse me. And I'm not worried about all the, you know, remembering everything that happened. But I just wanted to ask you know, is it normal to I mean, is it, well, not normal, but is it wrong to like not worry about my abusers or not pray for them? And not that I mean, it's kind of like when you're hurt so bad, you know, you.
Yeah, we only have 3 minutes left, so 2 minutes left.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's wrong to pray for your abusers if that's what you want to do.
No, or not pray for them, or not pray for them, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's up to the individual. I don't think there's any pat answer to that, and I think that, you know, Pastor Deborah, she is a minister, and I think she'd agree with that. I personally, I pray for them, but I gave it to God because it was easier. It was too big for me, and that's how I handle it. So we all have to handle things the way that, you know, are right for us. That's the way that I look at it. And I have to give the last couple of minutes to Pastor Deborah. We've been talking
okay,
all night long now. Yeah, thank you, honey, for that. We've been talking all night long about suicide, and I do hope that we brought forth enough awareness to people, especially during this time, you know, about suicide, because there are so many people. There's over 2,000 people a day who commit suicide. People don't even realize that. We don't talk about it enough. I do have information on that. And but there are two. Pamela, I think, had mentioned, or maybe it was Pastor Deborah, that there are numbers that you can call, okay, and get help. You can do that. So I'm going to leave it now over to you. We have about 2 minutes left. Go ahead.
Oh,
leave
okay.
people with some hope. Yeah, give some
That's
people not... some hope.
Hmm. Well, for people who have been abused as a child, there is hope. There's plenty of help out there. You just have to be willing to ask. There's all sorts of ways to get the help. Most people do choose to be on medication for a while so their system can calm down. Then they can talk. That's called cognitive therapy. Some people choose hypnosis, aromatherapy, bring in calming. If you choose something, choose things that will not hurt you, like don't do alcohol, maybe a little bit. It's got a lot of alcohol. But cigarette smoking is a depressant, but it hurts you. Doing other things. But it takes a time, and I tell people, there is healing. You got to work at it. If you need to lose weight, it takes time to lose weight. If you need to get your heart condition straightened out, diabetes, it takes work and time. And you have to be under some good doctors that you trust, and you have to be educated, like Carol went and did some studying, lots to learn about it. All sorts of people out there that will help you if you want to be healed. Does it take work? Yes. Does it take time? Yes. Is there all sorts of manners of it? Yes. Okay? And that just depends on you. And even if you have a diagnosis of depression, doesn't mean you have to keep it. It can be changed, done away with. You can get off medication. But maybe that's what you need right now. There's support groups. Jessica has one. There's all kinds of Zoom support groups. There's in-person support groups. There's 12-step programs. There's depression support groups. There's grief support groups. There's no lack of help. And people should be in it if they've had child abuse and in reading books about true stories about people who've been there, came out of it. Studying and learning and seeking help.
Okay. I thank you so much for being on. Thank you for that. And that is hopeful because there is hope. There is life after abuse. I refuse to let any of those people define who I am today. I just say to them, okay? That's what I do. Okay. I had to get something a little funny in there. We had a heavy show tonight. It was a good show. It's informative. And, there is life after abuse. I want to thank everybody that called in. I'm sorry I didn't get to the last one. But anyway, I have to end up the show now. So thank you so much for coming on, Pastor Deborah. And I will see you next month. Next month.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Good night, everybody. All right. Take care. I love you. And love each other, too. Okay. Good night now.
Love Talk Radio.